is the Right Brain Podcast, where we help you become a working writer by answering your questions, sharing your journeys, and helping you navigate the world of writing.
I'm Shanta Grimes. This is the Right Brain Podcast, and today we are talking about starting a membership community. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
I have Meg Stewart and Ashley Shannon, Shanta Grimes, here to help you figure out, help ourselves figure out how to do a membership community.
Well, you're already doing a membership community, Shanta.
I feel like I'm flying by the seat of my pants, learning and trying to figure it out as I
go. Well, it seems to be working because we have, what, 600 members now?
Right around 600.
How does that make you feel? Because it's like doubled since I joined almost a year ago.
It's really exciting. I only really started the Ninja Writers Club a year ago. So it took about a year to get 600, and it's super exciting. It's like the coolest thing I've ever done. The whole Ninja Writers in general, but the club in particular it's been like an experiment, and it worked out way better than I expected it to. But I often feel like I'm like running to catch up, like trying to figure out how to stay on top of everything.
Because there's a lot of pieces to it, right? To bring together.
Yeah. Yep. But you guys both have membership programs that you're at different levels of getting going.
Yeah, mine's probably, I don't know. I started in February before I was doing the tech calls for Ninja Writers. And so the toughest part, I think, about the membership community is the marketing piece. It's definitely on my radar to do again. But what I've learned is that I really want to do more with, you know, as I'm teaching tech stuff, I'm also teaching business startup. And so I really want to go lean more into that. So I think that when I do a membership program again, it'll probably be a lot more focused on that.
Yeah, and that's Freelance Filter.
Yeah.
And how about yours, Ashley?
Mine is technically, I guess, doing like a soft launch on September 1st, which is coming up really, really fast.
Yes.
I haven't had as much of an issue with the marketing aspect, mostly just because I haven't really, I stuck to the things that I feel like are my strengths, like social media, and like I'm going to write a Medium post and send it out to my newsletter. But I think just coming up with an appropriate amount of content, like not so much content that's, it's going to be overwhelming right from the start, but enough that I feel like it's a value has kind of been like my issue, or like kind of like the balancing act I'm doing right now. Cause I want to have enough content that people are really excited, but I also don't want it to be like you open Teachable and there's 30 courses and then you're like, oh crap.
Yeah.
So
that's a balancing act, I guess, for Ninja Writers, is that we serve like a huge variety of different kinds of writers. So like Ashley, yours is called Remote Way of Life.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's about being like a creative digital nomad.
Yes.
And so it's a fairly narrow niche, and mine's like all writers.
Yeah.
And yeah. This is why niching is a really good thing, right? Because like to serve all writers, I have to have fiction calls and classes and nonfiction and freelance and blogging and all of this stuff, and people who want writing businesses of whatever kind. And it's a lot of balls in the air. It's fun. I'm like, love it a lot, but it's a lot of balls in the air.
It really is. That was one of the things, like, there's a whole community of digital nomads and stuff like that, but I did not want to try and service all of them because it would just be like too much. So yeah, and niching down was definitely something that is going to help me, I think, in the future.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. I did start out with a niche, you know. I started out wanting to help people write their first novel, which is much narrower than where Ninja Writers has gone. Part of that is just trying to be flexible and shift with whatever's happening in the world at the time and whatever. So we've made, like, this last few months, 6 months or whatever, we've really shifted a lot towards helping people make money, because that's on everyone's mind with COVID. So, and it's less relevant to fiction writers, because I've made money writing fiction. You totally can, but it's not a very quick fix if you need money right now.
It's lots of work. I mean, you know, short fiction and stuff like that, there's markets that are paying for that.
It's much harder to make a living as a, say, a short story writer than it is to make a living as a freelance writer.
Yeah.
Or a ghostwriter, copywriter, whatever. Blogger, even. Fiction is like a slow burn.
Well, blogging is more, I think blogging is a more long-term income stream, because it takes that time to build your traffic and all that kind of stuff. But
see, that's where we always like disagree, just because that wasn't my experience. But I always have to take a step back and be like, 95% of people, that is their experience.
Yeah, because so. I mean, there's also people who write a novel and then, you know, they finish it and then they get an agent the next week, and then a month later, right, have like seven publishing houses auctioning off their, you know, in an auction war on their book. It happens. It's just not something you can super count on, the way you can count on, say, if you have a contract to write something, like for a freelance contract with somebody. I just had someone in a workshop that got one for the whole next year. Super excited. And, you know, so she can count on that in a way that, like, even I have an agent, I've had books traditionally published. I'm writing a book right now that I have no idea if it will sell. So it's, and it's glacial. Like, if I finish this book this month, which is my goal, I still am going to have to, you know, maybe I'll get paid in a year. Maybe if I sell it. Yeah, it's slow.
Yeah.
There are so many reasons of why I decided not to really try to be traditionally published, and that is definitely one of them. Yeah. I'm almost like an instant gratification person. Like, you put a book up on Amazon and then you can immediately start making money. So writing a book and then waiting a year to maybe sell it is just, yeah.
Oh no, if I sell it, then I will get paid in about a year. If I don't sell it, but I would know, it wouldn't take a year to sell it.
Oh, gotcha.
But it takes a while to get paid. It is just glacial. It's so slow. It's just the way it is. So membership programs. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about this is what Ashley's doing right now, a founding member launch, which is, you know, like when you're at the very beginning of offering a membership program, you offer the early adopters a discount or just a chance to get in on the ground floor of your cool thing. So that's what Ashley's doing. That's what Ninja Writers is doing. We have like a part of Ninja Writers Club that's going to be new that we're doing on September 15th. Probably talk about that, huh? This will probably come out just in time.
We can definitely talk about it. I might have accidentally let something slip in a class yesterday too. So
I've been talking about it. And if it's an academy class, it's okay, because they get it anyway. But we're expanding some parts of the Ninja Writers Academy, which is not scalable. So then you have to start thinking about scalable versus not scalable. The Ninja Writers Club is scalable. The classes we teach, they could have as many people as want to come to them, so it's pretty easy to scale that. although I will say it's pretty easy to scale that, but because we teach live classes and live calls, you start to lose quality when you get too many people. And so in order to scale, we had to have a team. Like I couldn't have gotten, I don't think I could have effectively served 600 people by myself the way I could say 200 or 300 people.
I mean, you might have been able to, you just wouldn't have done anything else.
Already, don't you? So scalable, and then the academy is our like highest end of the club. It's like, it's not in the club. I think of it as like a family of services or whatever. And then the academy, I do one-on-one coaching with everyone in the academy 4 times a year. So it's not scalable. I can't do any more of that than I'm already doing. So we're going to take the parts of the academy that are scalable and all of the club and make like a second, like a middle tier for people so that they can take advantage of some of the classes that so far we've only been offering to the club or the academy. And it's going to be the guild, the Ninja Writers Guild. And I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to let us offer more stuff, which is the opposite of what Ashley was talking about. I don't have a problem with I have the opposite problem of like some people are worried about how much, like how are they going to get enough to put in there? And I'm like, I have to like try to not pile on so much that people are confused, and I don't do a great job with that all the time. But we're going to have like genre specific workshops and classes, and I don't know, I'm really excited. What are you going to offer in your membership program, Ashley?
I'm going to do, it's almost like each month is going to have a theme, and we're going to have a course that they can work through throughout the month on their own in Teachable, and then like one live call a month to kind of talk with me and hopefully have some experts that they can come and talk to. And then when, you know, the first month, second, you know, a few months pass or whatever, they'll continue to have access to all of those classes. So when new people join, they'll have the content that's already been, you know, the month before or whatever, they'll have access to all of those courses too.
You want to talk about the kind of courses you're going to offer?
Yeah, well, right now I'm building a course about just knowing if, you know, digital work, working online, working from home or working while you travel is for you. I think a lot of people jump into it and haven't really assessed whether or not it's something that they can do very well or easily or will fit them. I think it takes a lot of discipline. Me as a mom, if I would have known how difficult it was going to be to juggle 2 kids and a 40-hour plus work week, I would have maybe rethought exactly how I was going to do it. So that's the first course. And then the second course is, I only have the first two planned out, is going to be about figuring out the right business venture for you. Whether it's, you know, graphic design or freelance writing or, you know, some sort of Etsy store and crafts and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different options for people who are working remotely.
I wonder if you think, if you, either of you guys, if you think it's useful, like when you're talking, I can see where you could do what Ninja Writers did, which was to get beyond the niche, right? Like I can see where you could just become a resource for digital workers that aren't necessarily remote, like are not remote, but like living in an RV or living in a bus or whatever.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I picked remote, because remote work doesn't necessarily mean that you're not doing it from home. Right. I mean, you can, it's just the having the ability to do it from anywhere. Right. So yeah, you don't have to be in an RV.
What's your niche, Meg? Oh, you said starting, helping people with business startups.
Yeah, really small business startup, because as I'm teaching technology, what I'm finding is that people need a lot of information about the stuff that you do when you plan a business, you know, as far as getting that, getting to that point where you're launching. So branding and just what is, you know, what is the business and, you know, where are those pieces going to be? And, you know, what is your unique selling proposition and how do you come up with your messaging? You know, I have a group that's been meeting since February that is, you know, once a week since February. And, you know, that group has taught me a lot about, you know, they're really my founding member group, right? But, they've taught me a lot about, you know, in teaching technology, what other things, you know, can kind of go hand in hand with that. So it's almost like teach the theory and then teach the technology so they can actually do it. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people teaching out there for like blogging or freelancing or whatever. And, you know, they tell them what they need to do, but they don't tell them how to do it. So yeah. They tell them you need to brand your business, but they don't tell them how to brand their business, both in, you know, talking about the origin story and the messaging and stuff like that, but also the technology to do it. You know, that's why Freelance Filter got started, is because the technology, you know, there's a lot of people teaching freelancing and blogging that, you know, they say, okay, this is what you need to do. You need to get a domain and you need to have a website and you need to have this or that, but they don't tell them how to do it. And if people struggle with the technology, there's nothing out there for to help people along with it. And I saw a lot of people who were, you know, starting a blog or, you know, starting off freelancing without really having a solid idea of what their service was or what their business was going to be about. And, you know, they're basically wasting their time doing that because they're going to build traffic to a site that, you know, they haven't thought it through. They don't have a blog strategy or content strategy. They haven't even thought out what is their, you know, unique selling proposition. So I just feel like there needs to be that out there, and it needs to be combined with the technology of how to do it.
What excites me the most about Freelance Filter, and always has, is that I know that I struggled with this when I started Ninja Writers, and then there are people who have even less technical ability than I do, that most of the people that are out there teaching this stuff assume a level of competency at the beginning, that if right. you don't have that, it all sounds like gobbledygook. It's like,
yep. And it keeps people from getting their work out into the world. I mean, we have some amazing writers in Ninja Writers, some amazing business people in my Friday group that, you know, they wouldn't get their stuff into the world because they would give up because of the not being able to deal with the technology. So
like I remember switching from one email server to another one, and it said all the directions were was make a CSV. And yeah. I was like,
what the heck is a CSV?
I didn't know what a CSV was.
Mm-hmm. And I had to go how to do it.
It took me 3 days, and I was crying, like 3 full-time days to figure that out. And I finally had to call the email server like in tears and ask them to help me and do it for me. And they did, but I mean, I was like crying, and they were like, it's not what they do, but they walked me through it. But so what I really love is that we're like Freelance Filter helps people like get, like, you know what I mean? So that they can go out and see what other people are offering too, you know, and have the ability to do that. Like,
it's, I mean, I have people in my Friday group that are doing some stuff that, you know, in February you would have thought they would never do, you know? So, because technology, learning technology is a lot about, you know, the repetition and the osmosis of it. You know, you just have, sometimes you just have to do it over and over and over again. Before it sinks in that, oh, this is how I do this. So, you know, I just told the group on Tuesday for the tech call, I said, you know, they said, oh, you're so patient with us. You answer the same question over and over again. And I said, I don't mind doing that because I know that everybody who's listening is getting that too, you know? So even though it's somebody different that's asking me about ConvertKit, you know, those other people that are sitting there listening who asked me last week, you know, they're getting it too by osmosis because they're hearing the same steps over and over again. So it's kind of exciting.
I think so too. But I think that's a really good lesson for when you want to build your own
definitely
program, is to think about where there's a gap, right? The gap was particularly women, although you don't, I don't think you market just to women, but I mean, you, most of your clients so far have been women.
Yes.
Under the age of 50, yeah, who are just not the target market for the people who are generally teaching that stuff. And so they expect, like, they're teaching to their target market, and these women in particular are these people that can't, you know, they're trying to learn something that's not being taught to their strengths or whatever.
Right. So I think wherever, when you're thinking about who your membership is and what you're going to teach, you know, back up about 10 steps, you yeah know, and start there.
Yeah, yeah. Or just think about, like, who are you, like, who do you want to serve? And then who's already serving them? And then what are they missing? Like, where is a gap that you can come in and fill?
Right.
Because like, I, like, when I started Ninja Riders, I knew that there were lots of places, and particularly then, but still now, there were, like, NaNoWriMo was a huge thing. It is still a huge thing. And all kinds of, but at that time, online courses were having, like, their golden moment, and it was like, mm-hmm, to do this and do this in 7 days to do that. And I was like, hey, let's, like, take a whole year and write a book.
But NaNoWriMo needs some technology stuff too, you know. I mean, there's a lot of people that would participate in NaNoWriMo that don't because of the technology, you know. So
yeah,
and that's on my list for future, is, you know, other businesses that are doing that same thing where they're teaching something, but the technology that they're using is something that people don't understand. And so I would offer the tech calls to, you know, other businesses. Yeah. Probably not NaNoWriMo, but, you know, other places. So maybe some of those gurus that are teaching it without addressing the technology piece of it. So.
Well, I think a lot of those courses, I mean, they were like a big boom, and they still kind of are. I see those ads all the time, like, build your course in 7 days. But, like, a lot of them don't give their members actionable steps that, like, create results. Mm-hmm. I know that's really, like, that's been my main focus. Like, Shanta built a course that was, you know, by the end of this course, you're gonna have a novel. It may take you a year, but you're gonna put in this work and you're gonna have, you know, the result that you want. And I feel like sometimes it's just kind of like, do this, and then you do this, and then you do this. And when you get lost along the way, you know, then they don't get any results. A lot of places
don't care because they've already taken your money at that point.
Well, and also, though, I think this is the difference between a course and a membership community. Mm-hmm. A membership community, the emphasis is on community, and it's also on, like, it's in person or personal, like, where you're meeting with other people, and you're not just getting often when you buy a class, you're getting, almost all the time when you're getting, buy a class, you're getting something pre-recorded that's already either text or audio or video or whatever, but it's already done. And so you're just going through it at your own pace. So you buy it, and then you know, there's no,
you're on your own to figure it out.
Maybe they give you a Facebook group or something, but it's usually there's nobody in there anymore. And it's, you know, it's self-paced. So, I mean, if that's your thing, that's okay. But a membership community, totally, like, the part that makes us a membership community for Ashley versus selling that course every month is that she's going to have these live one-on-one calls and maybe a Slack channel. Slack channel or whatever, like the parts of it, the thing that, to me anyway, that makes a membership community stand out from a course, just selling a course, is the community part. And it's also a way, because you can scale it, so you can have, you know, you can offer the same amount you can have, it's about having more people paying less money than a few people paying a lot of money. like when I sold a novel idea, it was, you know, I sold it for $500, and I can sell, I have a novel idea now. The only way to get it is in the Ninja Writers Club. And it's, you know, someone could in theory get it for $5, right? The first, there's a coupon out there all the time for $5 for your first month. And if someone really wanted to, you can't go through the whole class in a month, I don't think.
You can try.
The whole thing. I mean, it's 150 lessons. If you really wanted to, you could, you know, you could at least get some of it, you know, but my hope is that the community will keep you coming back.
I think it awful, like, it's about the community, but it's also about like a level of support. You buy a course and maybe you've got an email address or like a support at whatever that you can email with a question, but you know, that, like Meg said, they've sold you their course, you've bought it, they're not looking for you to become a return customer. You know, emailing you back and walking you through something isn't really high on their agenda. But like in a community, like I wouldn't want any member to be like, I can't figure out Teachable or anything like that. You know, we spend a lot of time in Ninja Writers making sure that links work and people can get to the right replays and stuff like that. And, you know, if we were to just sell them a course and throw a bunch of links in there, they wouldn't have that support at all.
Right. I agree. So what's your niche, Ashley? What's your like gap that you're filling in the digital nomad world?
Just, oh, that's a hard question. Right now it's, it is partly teaching people, a lot of people that I've met in schoolie groups or RV groups, on the road or whatever, sold all their possessions and moved into a school bus and they're on the road and they didn't really think about making money. They thought about like getting odd jobs in different towns and all these different things. And I meet a lot of people who are struggling. And so that started out as that was going to be my niche. But now it's more about just finding a way to build a business that a lot that it is something that you can do from anywhere and is something that plays to your strengths. I've built a lot of businesses that didn't play to my strengths. You know, I wanted to be a full-time fiction writer at one point, and that didn't play to my strengths at all. So it's just about finding, helping people find, you know, a business that will work for them remotely.
I'm curious if you have thought about like when you have gone out and tried to get information about like living in a school bus or being just a nomadic, right? If you ran into like none of this stuff is designed for single moms.
I run into that all the time. It's like people think that single moms are not crazy enough to do this lifestyle. Like you go on just YouTube and type in, you know, people that lives in vans and schoolies, and it's all couples or families, or like single guys. Yeah, it's definitely not for single moms.
And do odd jobs around town at all, because if you were, you know, it's not like, I mean, you'd have to stay near your like somebody, some support system to babysit for you, or you would have to earn enough money doing odd jobs around town to pay for daycare, which would seem like it's totally negating the whole purpose of what you're doing. So I wonder if you like, have you thought about like not saying, oh, I'm only open to single moms, but like when you're thinking about the classes, it like, how can you fill the gap for people who maybe are single or have kids who can't do things the way that like, because my gut feeling is that a lot of the people talking about that is the same as my niche and Meg's niche, particularly Meg's niche, where it's like mostly married millennial men, and so they have a wife. You know what I mean? And not everybody has a wife, and not everybody's a millennial man, and not everybody, you know what I mean? So like where you find yourself, I wonder if you have found yourself like trying to take that information and then figure out how to make it work for you.
I hadn't really thought about that angle. Just, gosh, it's really funny to continue to have this conversation because we've given Meg so much crap over the year that I've known her about niching down. But I really didn't want to limit my audience.
Oh, didn't you?
To just, you know, single moms. And there are a lot of businesses.
Let me ask you something.
Okay.
When you were researching and you weren't thinking about starting a business, but you were thinking about being, you know, living in a school bus, if you had found someone whose total focus was on single moms, would you have been like, oh my God, this is exactly what I need?
Yeah, probably.
And then when someone else was like a single mom and they're like, man, I wish I could do what you did, you'd be like, oh my gosh, you should go check out Ashley Shannon. She's totally doing exactly what you want to do.
That's definitely true. I mean, I don't think that there's anybody in the community that caters to this kind of lifestyle just for single moms or even just for single women. But I do feel like there are a lot of things that target women my age as like entrepreneurs and business owners. Yeah,
there's actually a whole group of women that go around. They all have RVs and they go around together and travel.
I don't think they do that full time though, but yes, I've read about them.
I can't remember what they're called, but I totally want to.
I can't either, but once my kids are grown, I'm probably going to join them.
Me too. I totally want to get a little old fat, like a...
What I think you should consider talking about, Ashley, is all of the issues that people have when they're mobile that they don't necessarily have when they're in one spot. Like, you're in one place right now, so you have internet there. But a lot of folks are, you know, really struggling with if they want to do something where they're working online, you know, how they make that happen and, you know, whether they'll have internet at the next place that they go to or whatever. And, you know, can they get a hotspot through their cell phone and all that kind of stuff? I mean, there's just a lot of what do they do when there's no power available or, you know, running generators and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, that's one of the courses that I'm trying to outline is just to be prepared for the type of situation that you want. You know, some people buy an RV and they do just want to park it in an RV, you know, at a RV lot or whatever. But you know, I have come up against already, you know, when the weather's crappy and my cell phone doesn't work or if the power's out, and you know, I've looked at generators, and there's a lot of like preparedness that goes into being able to like work mobily, you know. And there's a lot to explore, there's a lot to definitely go over, but it would be good to maybe even have kind of like a little, like if I did a Slack group for the whole remote way of life, to have one channel that was just for single moms, because it's like you have all the same obstacles that everybody else has, and then you have like 10 more on top of that every day.
Well, and single moms only have one income and not two. So mm-hmm. they're going to be less able to afford all of those things that they need to have, not only for being remote, but also for, you know, business startup.
Yeah, I like the idea, but the idea of, gosh, I hate this. I sound like Meg. The idea of limiting my audience to such a small portion of people scares me a little bit. But it is an idea for sure to look into.
Well, I don't think that you have to do it overtly. Mm-hmm. I think that you can just, I don't overtly limit Ninja Riders very much, but we definitely have a core constituency or whatever. Like, we definitely have a very specific, I think we have a very, like I didn't go out of my way to say, this is a group for new writers, but most of our writers are new.
You didn't go out of your way to say, this is a group for Gen X writers, but most of your writers are Gen X. It just kind of happens that way, I think.
Right. But
build it, they will come.
Yeah. But if you write courses like, here's how to you just talk to those people, you know what I mean? Then they will find you.
Yeah, I think just with, you know, the membership being run by a woman and by a single mom, I think that it's, you know, it's probably going to attract those people just because. I mean, if I were going to join a membership community for, you know, digital nomads or whatever, I would be more inclined to join one ran by a woman, whether she was a single mom or not, just because I feel like it's, you know, they know my situation better. It's like that guy we talked about him in one of the other podcasts about how you told him you were only gonna write like 10 minutes a day, and he thought that was like the smallest goal, and he was like trying to get you to write like way more in a day. And I was like, dude, as a mom and a wife and like all these different things, like a 10 minute goal is great. Like, and sometimes I feel like the other demographic doesn't really understand those things. So
the other demographic.
Is that like the other white meat?
This is the nice way of saying sometimes I feel like guys don't get it. Like,
that's true. But. Well, I could not convince him that, dude, I'm not writing 10 minutes a day. Like, that's my goal, but I blow it out of the water by a lot, like 90% of the days that there are. Like, I really have not built a whole business working 10 minutes a day. If I could figure that out, I would be next Tim Ferriss.
I was going to say, is that the guy who wrote the four-day work week or whatever?
Four-hour work week.
Yeah, four-hour work week. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I think his idea is to hire single moms from...
Yes, from the Philippines.
Really? I've never read that book.
I haven't read it either, because I know that there's no such thing as a four-hour work week.
I just know that somebody is working more than 4 hours in that
book. Somebody is working
like more than 4 hours, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's very true. That's something that I was looking into for Remote Way of Life is like, you know, you want to travel and go to all these cool places, but you don't want to sit for 12 hours in front of your laptop running your business while you're in Thailand or wherever, you know, so you've got to find some sort of balance. And that's, you know, something I'm struggling with. So maybe I just need to hire other single moms.
Make them work.
Either that, or I'm still looking for that husband income stream, so.
That one's nice.
I would take even just like a husband, like daycare situation. Like, it doesn't even need to be an income stream.
After every single meal, that's all I'm gonna say about it. I drink the ice cream when I have to work late. So he's really cool. If you can get your hands on a Kevin, I just would say it's like a risky proposition, but when it works out well, it's pretty cool.
Kevin's going to be infamous to our podcast members or listeners. Like, we've talked about him multiple times. Nobody knows what he looks like or if he really exists. You just see like a bowl of ice cream given to Shonda every once in a while.
Well, I was on a call with Deborah one time, and her husband brought her a sandwich, and I just said, can I get a sandwich too?
Can I just tell you?
He was not amused.
You know what Deborah's husband's name is?
Kevin.
Kevin.
Just saying, if you can Kevin, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Risky, because they're not always good, but if you find a good one,
it works. I'm going to start going through, and I'm going to get on a dating app and start swiping, and I'm just going to swipe right only on the people named Kevin.
Yeah, but you know, on the dating app, they could be faking their name too. Like, so
you can start a thing, and like all of the men on match.com are going to call them. It'll be like Karen's, but good.
Yeah.
Like Karen. So back to membership community. Let's get off of the husband income stream and back to building a membership community.
Okay, well, I have a question.
Okay.
Since I'm like in the beginning stages and you're further ahead of me, if there's one thing that you would go back and do differently starting your membership community, what would it be?
I would have started it sooner. So you're doing really good starting it in the beginning. I didn't start mine really. Ninja Writers Club started out as a way for me, like it has been around for a long time, but for a really long time, it was just like a free thing that I gave. The first two times I sold a novel idea, I had the club, and then I was like, okay, if you buy it, you get to go in the club, and then if I create anything else, you can have that, and that's all I ever did. There was nothing else. And I wish that I had done what we're doing now a couple, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So there's that. And then I wish that, but let me think if there's anything else. Definitely, when I had a lot of content, and that was actually something, it's not something I wish I did, because I did do it. Like I have been very grateful that when I started Ninja Writers Club, I had a bunch of content already up there. I had a bunch of content to already give people. So when you're talking about creating a course every month, it gives me like some anxiety for you on your behalf, because it, you know, if you're not at least one or two classes ahead of those people, you're going to, you know, are you going to be spending like the last week of every month, like trying to slam out a class? So definitely try to either get yourself ahead or don't start until you have a couple of months of content already created so that you can have some breathing room. I've coached someone through starting a membership program who didn't do that, and his level of anxiety was so high. And I was finally like, dude, you just have to go hire someone to write, like get you ahead, like hire a writer to write you a couple classes so that you can be ahead. And he did, but it was like so much anxiety before that, because he was constantly just like 2 seconds ahead of his entire membership program, and it was really stressful for him. And the other advice I have, this is not, I feel like we did pretty good with Ninja Writers Club. I don't know if there's anything I really wish that we, I think we probably waited too long to do the onboarding stuff. Like getting people, like when they join the club, where they knew what was going on. I have a tendency to forget that like not everybody has been around forever. And so brand new people sometimes pop in and they're like, what is happening? And I think it can be hard, a little bit of a learning curve. So I wish we had done that sooner, I guess. I think that you, one thing that is that you don't want to be afraid to, try new things and experiment and be part of the community and not above it. I think that that is the thing that makes Ninja Writers unique. And I think that it would work for yours and Freelance Filter. And I know already Meg is doing that with Freelance Filter, but where you're part of the community. So you show up and you're there, and it's not like the people who join never get to see you or get to talk to you. You know, I teach classes, and I'm on those calls, and I go to the write-ins, and I do, you know, I show up so people see me and I'm part of the community. And I think that that makes a big difference. And
we have people comment all the time, especially new folks that have just been coming in the last couple months, that, you know, the thing that's different is that we're real people. Like we're regular people. That's what one person said. She goes, I can't believe it. You guys are real regular people. And so I think that is, you know, definitely a millennials want more of an authentic connection with
everybody, the person
behind everything. And I think that's true. Yeah, I think that's true of everybody. That
I was at this conference a couple weeks ago, I keep bringing it up, but it was specifically about membership communities, so that's why. And this guy at one point said something about he'd gotten in his day job up to $400,000 a year, and he couldn't get any higher, and that's why he started a membership. And I was like,
why?
who even on this call or at this conference can even, I mean, obviously you can be authentic and wealthy, like that's, but okay,
he needs $400,000 a year.
No, just more than that. More, it's more than that.
I mean, that's
stuck at $400,000 a year, and whatever, you know, like, okay, he does come across, and he's known, this particular person is really known for being authentic, and it's okay. But I'm just saying that I think that's what's helped me, and what is that even though now I'm making more money and I'm probably there might be some ninja riders that are more successful than me, but probably not many, because between my books and blogging, whatever. But I started out like literally making $9 an hour, and I was like, hey, let's do this all together. And so I think that you, like, when you're starting out, don't be afraid to be part of the community, and don't feel like you have to say like that you are a step ahead or more than a step ahead. Like, obviously you want to be a step ahead if you're teaching something, but you can also just be like, hey, I'm figuring this out, and it's an experiment, and we're going to see how it works. And I've done that all the time in Ninja Riders, and I think it's what makes us stand out. I don't know how I want to say this. Like, I was having a conversation with someone when I was at that conference, like another conference person. And she was like, well, she doesn't want to give away like her class for $30 or whatever that she was going to charge a month. And I was like, you have to think of it, it's a membership community. So you have to, rather than each individual person paying like the full price for everything, each person is paying a portion, right? And so you have to like let go of the idea that like if you sell something at a membership price that you are undervaluing it or whatever. And like just try to take a deep breath and be like, it's gonna be okay, you know, it's gonna be all right. If enough people pay you $25 or $50 a month, it adds up pretty quickly. And it's like I think of it like a gym. Like, not everybody's gonna show up every month. You know, if everyone who paid for a membership at my gym showed up every month, you wouldn't be able to get in there. It would be packed to the roof, you know, all the time. So but the gym counts on people showing up, and that lets the gym charge. Like, my gym's just the YMCA, is pretty inexpensive, but I can pay $30 a month for the YMCA because they sell it to people who don't show up every month, or who, you know, not everybody is coming in and taking every single class and using every single piece of equipment every single day. If they were doing that, it would be a nightmare, right? But if you're selling a class, every single person, you know, because we do sell classes, and when I sell a class, I expect everybody to show up for everything for that class. Or, you know, you get the class, and to get your money's worth, you actually do have to show up to the whole class. A membership is different. The people are going to take what they can use, and they're not going to take what they can't use. And what has helped me a lot is the mindset that I'm offering something in the hopes of helping. And if someone can get something out of what I'm offering, out of a free trial or a discounted first month, or they pay for 1 month and they come download every single thing I have and then leave, you know, maybe they'll remember that they liked my content. And if it makes them successful business people, then maybe they'll send other people to me. And I don't want to say I don't think about it, but I don't worry about it. I think of it as a whole rather than each individual payment or whatever that comes in. It's like a conglomeration. So I don't know if I did a good job of explaining that, but
no, I think you did. And I think the other thing that plays into today's marketing, or the shift in marketing, is generosity. I mean, you have to be able to be generous with your community. And that comes in the form of, you know, answering questions and giving people information, and because that's the thing that people are going to remember. I answer questions all the time on Facebook groups, or, you know, on a call or whatever. I answer questions if people ask me, because they remember that generosity. And I think when it's time for them to come back and be ready to invest in themselves, they're going to come back to you. So rather than being like, oh, I'm not going to tell them this part, or I'm only going to give them this little piece, or, you know, I'm keeping this on the back burner or whatever, it's a secret, whatever. I think that you be generous with your time and with your information, and people remember that and they come back. I mean, there's people that are ninja writers now, you know, who saw me answering questions on a freelance Facebook group, you know, and that's when I go back and say, hey, you know, this group is awesome and I highly recommend it or whatever, they remember, oh, that's the person that told me how to do such and such, you know, 3 months ago. And yeah. So then they take that recommendation to heart because, you know, the information I gave them 3 months ago was valid. So I think that's an important piece of it, is building that generosity and building that reputation of being someone who cares about their success and is willing to help them get there. So
the flip side of that, I'm just going to say to both of you and everyone listening, is that you also have to know where your boundaries are, so that you don't, like, so you protect the amount, the time or the energy that you don't have to give, but then are free and generous with the energy that you do have to give, right? Mm-hmm. So like I do all of these group calls and I'm willing to take, I mean, I often stay an hour longer right. than the call is supposed to be, or longer. Like often I'm like, you know, I'm gonna stay until we have answered every question. I don't have a timer set and leave, but I don't, you know, I don't get on one-on-one calls with people because I don't have time. If I'm going to teach something, then I'm going to teach it to everybody, because there's any one-on-one question, more people have the answer. So if it's on a call and it's recorded, then other people can go and get that same information. So know what your boundaries are, for sure, because if you're going to do a membership program, you're about to embark on a journey where there's one you, mm-hmm. and even if it's a small membership, it's going to be 20 or whatever of them, and even 10 other people in you. Imagine being in a room and like 10 people are all wanting you to do something for them. It's like, it can be overwhelming quickly. So mm-hmm. Knowing your boundaries going in, like I don't work on Fridays. That's like a dead stop for me. I don't work on Fridays. My kid's a athlete and I want to be able to go to her games, and I need one day off a week or I'm going to lose my mind. So I don't teach or do anything on Fridays. I still write, but I don't teach on Fridays. And I don't take phone calls on Fridays. I mean, I try to preserve Friday, and I don't do one-on-one calls with people that have questions. I tell them which call they can come to, and then ask them to make sure that they're there, and I will notice them and I will call on them and ask them to ask their question. But I don't do it outside of that, because I just, that it would get overwhelming very quickly. There's 600 of them and one of me, or, you know, even half a dozen of us, right? Like they're, and the whole team, and that's 100 people for each of us, and it's too many.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
We do one-on-one. We tried actually doing a one-on-one situation for the onboarding, and it took about 3 minutes for us to be like, oh my God, we can't do this. Okay. Does anybody have any last thoughts?
No, I think this was good. I'm glad that we talked about this. It kind of gave me a little bit more insight before I launch Remote Way of Life in like a week. So.
Oh, you can find out information about Remote Way of Life in the show notes.
Yeah.
And the Ninja Writers Club and Freelance Filter in the show notes. All right, guys.
Awesome. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
This was the Right Brain Podcast. You can join us every Friday.